This is Not Quite Dead,
a Gal Pal horror movie discussion podcast.
We do deep dives on our favorite scary movies.
But sometimes we really just like to keep it shallow.
I'm your host, Kate.
I'm Megan.
Get ready for all the spoilers. I love Nicholas Holt.
I love Nicholas Cage.
It works out so well for us.
What a great duo. Do you think that was weird for them on set to like call each other Nick? Do you think they called each other Nick or Nicholas or Cage?
I was
Mr. Cage.
Wondering that too, because if I were working on that set, I would refer to them as the Nicks all the time.
Nick one, Nick two.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
This is our second Nicholas Holt movie this year.
Right. And I think this is our second Nicholas Cage movie that we've done. We did Wicker Man.
The Wicker Man. Yeah. And earlier this year, we did The Menu.
I also love me some Nicholas Holt. He really made an impression on me in Mad Max.
Oh, for sure. He's just been a really strong contender, like in the new field of young actors. I feel like he doesn't take himself too seriously. And so he's just hilarious in The Great, which is on Hulu about Catherine the Great. He's in all of these kind of satirical or comedy type movies. And we are here today talking about Renfield, which I kind of feel like he carries.
He does. He's so good at it. I did complain a little bit that this movie did not have enough Nicolas Cage. It's sort of like my cowbell moment. But Nicholas Holt makes the movie fun. He's super fun to watch in this movie and brings a lot to the character. I really like this take on Renfield, trying to be normal.
I do too. I think that it is a fresh way to get at the Dracula story. I actually felt like they used the appropriate amount of Nicolas Cage in this. I felt like it could have been like overboard had they done more. And instead it was like this funny little exclamation point, you know, every 10 to 15 minutes that we got some Nicolas Cage and that he wasn't just like nonstop Dracula vamping around the set.
How did this movie do? I thought it was fairly enjoyable.
I thought it was enjoyable too. It's a fun little movie that totally bombed at the box office.
Oh no.
It had a budget of $65 million and it only grossed $24 million. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yep. It made a third basically of its budget. Rotten Tomatoes, 57% across the board.
That's so, not terrible.
Yeah, not great, not terrible. I did find that some review sites, like I love reading AV Club. AV Club gave it a B-, and so it was like pretty favorable towards it. I felt like reviewers who weren't looking for anything too deep, they were willing to accept like a silly little vampire story, tended to like it better than others.
I mean, that's how I went into this movie. I really wasn't expecting, honestly, I wasn't expecting to be scared. I think it's just horror because it includes Dracula. But I had very low expectations for this movie. I went in hoping to get some good Nicolas Cage zingers and just have some laughs. And it did that. So I'm surprised it did so poorly. That's a bummer.
Is very surprising. And even though it's part of existing intellectual property, I feel like it's not a franchise, or at least it's not part of a franchise yet. And it really bums me out anytime a non-franchise movie does poorly, because I'm like, this is how we end up with 20 more Marvel Disney movies instead of like one-off fun silly movies. Yeah.
Along with the two Nicks, we have Awkwafina, who's mm-hmm. our I don't know. What is she? She's like a cop stereotype. She's like a look at me. I'm better than the rest of you, cop, because you're all crooked cops.
Yeah, she stereotype. Is basically playing like a cop stereotype. Like she's kind of a up and coming rookie who's living in her cop dad's shadow. She's just a traffic cop who wants to try and take down the local gang. And it's Awkwafina, so I thought that she was going to be a little punchier, and I felt like they kind of had her character play it a little straight, which felt a little bit like a waste.
Yeah, I'm not really privy to what she does. I know she was in Raya the Last Dragon. I saw her in that. Well, I saw that movie and her voice was in it. And when I was watching this, I was like, oh, she's not really that funny. Is she funny? I don't know. I can't tell from this movie.
I feel like she's been funnier in other things. She was in Crazy Rich Asians and was just playing a little bit more of an unhinged character and mm-hmm. was really letting loose. But I think that because she was supposed to be this kind of stuffy cop in this one, she just, yeah, I don't feel like playing against type worked for her in this role.
Ben Schwartz, in a way, also kind of went against what I would have expected for his character. Like, he's derpy. I mean, he plays like a goofball, but he's also playing it very straight. And mm-hmm. he's supposed to be this scary, like, mob guy. And I wasn't really getting that from him. I kind of just wanted him to go away.
Yeah, the mob stuff. Oh, my gosh. There's, like, two different plot lines in this movie that I just... like let go right through my brain. But Ben Schwartz, as his name is Tedward, they call him Teddy, and it was only when I was looking at the cast list that I realized that they named him Tedward. Yeah.
Oh wow, I never caught that.
I didn't catch that either.
Bizarre. Jimothy.
Yes, exactly. I really liked Ben Schwartz in Parks and Rec. Thought that he was so funny in that. And I think I was expecting him to be like, you know, little spoiled rich boy again in this role. But yeah, he's trying to be scary and it wasn't totally playing for me, but I didn't hate it.
He kind of reminded me of the Stephen Dorff character in Blade. He's supposed to be this sexy, scary bad guy, but he really just came off as like a twerp. And that's kind of how that's how I'd summarize him.
Yeah, I felt like they could have, for both Awkwafina and Ben Schwartz's characters, they could have just ramped up the silliness for both of them. Like Awkwafina mm-hmm. definitely is really good at like slapstick or more like physical type humor. Didn't really get an opportunity in this movie. Somehow there's a lot of action scenes and I feel like they didn't give her a lot of opportunities for that. Ben Schwartz, I think, could have been like a little sillier, a little goofier. I thought that Shohreh Aghdashloo, who plays the mom, Bella Francesca, I thought she was good.
Yeah, she was fine. I guess we'll get into this when we hear the plot, which is next. I didn't really enjoy the mob/police subplot at all. And so she was fine, but I was like, I don't want to deal with this. Like, I don't want this like straight mob secondary plot at all. I just want to see Dracula, Nicolas Cage, and Renfield, Nicholas Holt. I want to see those two together more because mm-hmm. I really, really liked their chemistry.
Yes.
But what is a good action comedy horror without a subpar subplot?
I know, it's like they need some kind of filler. Some interesting meta stuff about this movie, I thought, was that it was actually announced in 2014. Just came out this year. Yep.
I do not remember that.
So it went into development hell because, if you remember, they had tried to reboot The Mummy. I think they tried to reboot it with Tom Cruise.
Yes.
And it absolutely flopped. It was a commercial disaster.
I do remember that.
Yes. Universal had this plan. I mean, because they're chasing the Marvel formula, where they wanted to create Universal's monster universe. Their plan was to do The Mummy first, which they released, and then they had Renfield and a couple of others. But after The Mummy, everything was scrapped, rewritten, put on hold until in, 2017, 2018, when The Invisible Man came out. The Invisible Man.
That did really well.
Did very well. And so that reignited interest to restart this potential monster universe. And so Renfield, I think, was their dip back into seeing how it went. Very curious to know what they're going to do, because this one made no money.
They're like, nope, that actually is. It's baffling to me that they think that they can contend with the Marvel Cinematic Universe with old ass Universal monsters. Like, no one cares anymore. Like, these monsters have been in so many movies now. This IP is old and done many times over.
Yeah, they would need like a creative powerhouse to come in to really figure out how they're going to do it. And they wouldn't just be able to say like, oh, let's try a movie, see how it does, and then commit. They would need to commit to like, here are the 10 movies we're going to make. And even if the first couple don't do that well, we're, you know, both feet in doing it. And like, I feel like that's the only way. Because even with Marvel, I think that they were good at committing for the first like 18 movies or whatever. And now there's Marvel movies and stuff coming out that's not doing as well. I think because things are starting to feel like they're more one-offs rather than part of a more cohesive arc of movies coming out.
Well, should we go through the plot so that we can dive right into the movie?
Yeah, let's do it. This movie takes place in present day in New Orleans, where Renfield and his vampire master, Dracula, have relocated so that Dracula can rehabilitate and come back into his full power after he was attacked by some vampire hunters. Renfield is charged with murdering and bringing victims to Dracula so that he can eat them and come back into full health. And he, in a very Dexter formula, is like, oh, I'm going to, you know, kill bad people to bring back. So he's going to this 12-step program for people who are addicted to codependent relationships, and taking their partners over to Dracula. And in the midst of this shenanigans is where we get the two subplots that we have mentioned. He accidentally gets into the crossfire of a local mob called the Lobos family, very clever, who want to take him down for interfering with their business, drug running through New Orleans. And right on his tail, all up in this mix, is a cop, Rebecca, played by Awkwafina, who wants to prove herself and take down this gang because this gang killed her cop dad. And her fed FBI sister is also in New Orleans, also investigating this mob, also investigating some mysterious murders happening. And we see it all come together when Renfield decides that he is done with his abusive relationship with Dracula and he's going to try and make a life on his own. And Dracula does not want to give it up. That's really the highlight. And I just, I don't think that the plots with the cops in particular really do much for me. The mob also, but like the cop stuff, like, is just not really it for me in this movie.
Same. I immediately, when I saw what kind of character Awkwafina was playing, I was like, oh, it's one of those. this cop side plot is really going to drive me nuts.
I felt like with Awkwafina's character and her sister, they knew that they were writing a cop stereotype for Awkwafina. And so they decided to give her a sister and try and give her some motivation so that she wasn't just a two-dimensional character here. And mm-hmm. it just felt really unnecessary. And I felt like it really slowed things down when all the vampire stuff was so much more fun.
Yeah. It drove me crazy every time she would scream in the middle of the cop, like, I don't know, their work area, just calling them all corrupt and telling them to fuck off. Like, I'm like, can you imagine being in an office setting and somebody just starts screaming that shit? Like, maybe it happens in a police department. I have no idea what it's like to work in one, but it doesn't seem like you're going to gain any favor doing that, especially if they're all being bought off by the mob.
Right. It was unbelievable, but not in a funny way. Like, I think if something is unbelievable exactly. and it's like campy or silly, then that's great. But instead, I felt like they were trying to be really realistic, punctuated by these really unrealistic scenes. And that just like didn't really jive well. And I feel like some of the subplot stuff between the cops and the mob family were a little paint by numbers, where it's like, of course they're drug runners. Of course their hick guy got killed. Of course they've got beef because her dad was after them too. Like, it just all felt like, okay, sure. Mm-hmm. Like, you were just trying to flesh out the rest of the script.
Well, we have a couple of complaints about the laughs in this movie, but honestly, it had a lot of good moments. And we want to harken back to our comedy season and go through what we thought were our top lulls of the movie. We each have our own list, but we'll pick the top three and we'll get to some others as we cover the rest of the plot. But yeah, I mean, this movie had some good laughs. So Kate, do you want to start with your first comedy moment?
Yes. I really loved the support group leader, Mark, who is heading up this 12-step program for codependence. He has some really great, just like little quips, and his mannerisms are really funny to me. When Renfield is explaining that he needs to stop his boss from coming into full power, Mark, the support group leader, is like, yes, absolutely. Why would you say it like that? That's so weird.
I liked Mark.
Yeah.
And that was a good line from the commercials, I remember. Mm-hmm. And I still thought it was funny.
Yes.
Surfaced.
A good enough like joke that even though I had seen it in the trailer in context, it was still super funny. So that was my first one. What was yours?
Yeah. I'm going to go with the way they were ripping on ska music mm-hmm. in this movie. Mm-hmm. I found really funny. I mean, it was really only in the beginning, a couple of like throwaway lines in the support group when I forget her name, this character is complaining about her abusive boyfriend, Mitch, who, by the way, Kate, I really wish that Mitch had been played by Tim Robinson.
That would have been great.
He had these like weird little mannerisms that came up. And I was like, I had to do a double take because I was like, it almost sounds like Tim Robinson would be saying this, but he would have like taken it a step further and mm-hmm. gone like, you know, I think you should leave, honest. So anyways, that was a side note. But I did enjoy the way they ripped on Sky. I thought that was funny. And kind of a tangent off of that, I was looking at the graffiti when they go into Mitch's warehouse, I guess. Mm-hmm. And because I was like, what is this graffiti? Who writes "stop messing around" as graffiti? I looked up the phrase, "stop your messing around, better think of your future, time to straighten out, creating problems in town." And it's actually a ska song.
Yeah. The cops.
I didn't know that.
The cops say that it's a ska song.
Wait, do they really?
They do in that scene.
I missed it twice, Kate. I watched this twice and I didn't catch them saying that. I was like, oh, ooh, I want to go look up those phrases and see what they mean. I thought I was like all sleuthy about it.
That's
all right.
So
I'm just missing the point.
I loved the ska jokes. I thought they were so funny. I thought that it was really funny when Dracula is telling Renfield the kinds of people he needs to eat. He's like, this is ruined. And he's like, you know, just bring me like some tourists, nuns, maybe, you know, a bus full of cheerleaders. And he keeps insisting that's not a sexual thing.
Yes. I laughed out loud at that too.
Yeah. I thought that was pretty great.
This is like the Nicolas Cage that I wanted. Mm-hmm. Like, I wanted more of this because his delivery was so funny.
Yeah.
In that moment.
I thought that was great.
Don't make this a sexual thing. My second favorite moment was, again, with Nicolas Cage, my plan, you know, when he decides he wants to take over the world.
Yeah.
And he has this map up and it just says world domination in the middle. And I love jokes like that, that are so like simple, and it's like, we're not gonna worry about this, we don't care, like this isn't the point of the movie, we're just trying to get some laughs in. And it's just like, summary, world domination. And then like, and Renfield is just like kind of haphazardly taped up on the map. They kind of do that again with this movie later on, when Dracula meets the Teddy character, and Ted is like, yeah, my whole organization is evil. We're the bad guys. Like, I love how he just summarizes like every mob in like a very simple, thoughtless like phrase. Like, yep, we're just the bad guys. There's no more thought put into it than that.
That part was pretty great. Oh man, I love like bits in movies. Like, this one had some really funny like editing choices. On the world domination map, when it says, you know, his master plan, like by Dracula, and then there's like a post-it note that says Anne Renfield.
Exactly.
I loved that. And I really loved at the beginning of the movie when they're doing the like flashback on like, you know, the how did I end up here kind of thing. And it was actually splicing in Nicolas Cage's face over, yes, Bela Lugosi. I thought that was so funny and also very tickled because we've seen that and we covered it.
Yeah, I enjoyed that. And then if you look at the cast list for this movie, those old actors are like featured in the cast list.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah. I really liked that they were able to get their hands on the original footage and like edit it in. I thought it was pretty funny.
Yeah, I enjoyed that intro. I thought it was cool to like, I always like when movies sort of like put that Mandela effect like in your brain, like maybe it was Nicolas Cage the whole time. Well, my third favorite one, I think, was, and I had a few that I wanted to choose from, but I really liked Renfield's shitty poster collection in his room. Like those motivational posters. And they're just like, they're not even like up nicely or in a grid, like in frames, whatever. He just like has them posted all over each other. It's just like, I have to have all these here.
I loved how cute his apartment was.
It was cute.
It was so cute.
I love how he goes from like little goth boy to like patchwork knit sweater.
I know. He kind of looks like he's from a Gap ad, but I love it for him.
Oh, he brings back a bunch of Old Navy, so it makes sense.
That's right. Product placement. I should have noticed.
Yeah. Oh, I did. They got me.
I also want to hear about our top horror moments.
Ooh, that's a little more tough to come by in this movie. It's hard because everything is so intertwined with comedy, mm-hmm, but I was able to pull out a few things.
I totally agree. I felt like my horror moments were all gore moments, and the gore is played for laughs. Mm. So, you know, this is the balance that we always talk about with a horror comedy is like, you know, this one felt maybe more like a 80-20 mm-hmm. comedy to horror sure. ratio. Yep. But what's one of yours?
I'm going to start with Dracula's Lair, mostly mm-hmm. because I just thought it was so fucking cool looking. It was definitely my favorite set piece in this movie. But
yes.
Yeah, the look of the blood bags as like a throne against this like green light. It's actually pretty frightening. Like if you stumbled upon that while you're exploring an abandoned underground, I don't know, it's not abandoned, it's like this underground area, I guess that area is abandoned, not the apartments themselves, but it would be really scary actually to find that, like, what the fuck is happening down here?
Yes.
Even though it's cool and not like really shown in any truly scary fashion, I think it's a pretty good horror moment.
I totally agree. I think that the scene when the mob guys are coming in to try and find Renfield and they just are stepping over bodies and they see this, you know, hanging blood bag set is really impressive. I really liked that too. Okay, so I loved at the beginning of the movie when Dracula teleported into the vampire hunter's body and exploded him.
Yes, the priest. That was great.
Yeah. It was
I screamed because it was so funny. Yeah.
It was funny, but also like I wasn't expecting it. It was so good.
I was like, whoa. They did a lot of that kind of like body horror moments when Ben Schwartz's character gets it. Mm-hmm. They do a quick x-ray shot of his body and what's happening as he's getting kickboxed to the gut.
Yeah.
His spine is shattered and it shows shit coming out of both ends. And I know it's supposed to be scary, but that really cracked me up. But yeah, they do a lot of that over the top body horror, but in a very silly way. I think my second was probably Dracula burning up.
Mm-hmm.
I thought the effect there was pretty cool. And he looks grotesque. I mean, you can tell there's a lot of CGI happening, but him burning and then like slowly getting better over time, transforming back into his normal Dracula self is all very gross looking and kind of creepy. I do like that we got to see this view of Dracula, like Dracula healing himself and not just being pristine all the time. I thought that was cool. And a bit scary.
Yeah, I liked that too. The makeup effects were really good. Whenever I see mm-hmm. an actor in a lot of makeup prosthetics, I always wonder how it felt for them to film in that after just reading so many stories of other actors yeah. who had miserable experiences filming with prosthetics.
Yeah. I mean, I was also looking at his teeth, right? Because he's got these fake mm-hmm. teeth in and they're over his real teeth. And it just seems like it's really coming through in his voice, like the fact that there are teeth in the way of his teeth. And I have to imagine that was a bit annoying because you can tell that they're not real teeth.
It seems like he tried pretty valiantly to get over that, though. So mm-hmm. I was like, oh, it could have been yeah. a lot worse with the teeth. And they looked good, at least.
Yeah.
My
what was your second?
My second was when Renfield punches the hitman's head so hard that it decapitates him and the head like hits Teddy's car.
Yeah, it's good. What was up with that hitman, by the way? Like, what was that costume he was wearing?
I don't know. I was like, oh, do these guys just like wear silly outfits? And no, it was just that guy. It yeah. was just that one particular guy wearing like he's yeah. wearing like a mask.
It was very like executioner style, but also Batman, or I don't know, it was just very cartoonish the way it was stitched together. It was like a stitched together mask. And I was like, oh, I guess he's scary. He kind of looks like Bane from Batman. Mm-hmm. But also, what the fuck? Like, who would choose to wear this as their murdering costume? A sack over their head.
Yeah, that was pretty goofy. But I really just appreciated, as we mentioned, the body mm-hmm. horror. So I liked the effect, even if it was pretty CGI'd, of the decapitated head kind of like flying at the car.
You know, the CGI in this movie was pretty obvious, but it was still well done. I didn't hate it. And that is what I put for my third. It's a bit of a cheat, but basically all of the explosion, like you brought up earlier, the body explosions and the gore that would happen during the deaths. Mm-hmm. I love that scene when Renfield and Awkwafina, can't remember her name already. What is it? It's Rebecca. When Renfield and Rebecca are running around killing all these mob people, and like I think he cuts off somebody's arms with a plate, and he like rips somebody's yes. face off. He throws arms as like spears into other people, and it's just like a big bloodbath. And although it's played for laughs, I thought, like, if you're squeamish and you don't like this about horror movies, this is a good horror moment, because it's a lot of gore in this movie, which I wasn't expecting, but was really into.
Yes. Was that your next moment, or?
That was my moment. Yeah. It was like a cheat. Yeah.
That's a great segue into my last moment, because a similar large execution scene was when Dracula massacred the 12-step group. And I felt like it was, you know, played for some laughs, where Dracula comes in and when he starts floating, they're like, wait, this isn't like a codependent relationship. This is literally Dracula. So it's super funny. But also, I just felt so sad that these poor people like didn't deserve any of this. And they all get killed. And Dracula doesn't even like drain them of their blood. And I was like, what the heck? These are actually good.
Bully.
Yeah, they're actually good people. Like, you'd think that he'd want to eat all of them. But now he just kills them to punish Renfield and then goes off on his own. And so that was my last horror moment.
That is a good one, because you're right. I was like, oh, I wasn't expecting that. I remember seeing this scene start in the commercial. And in the commercial, just sort of assumed, okay, this is going to be like Renfield and Dracula at a support group meeting. That's funny. Like, that's what will happen. Mm-hmm. But no, I was like, oh, everyone's dead now. And this is a comedy. Like, okay. I mean, they walk it back at the end, but the moment still was surprising.
Yeah. And it's got that nice like horror quality to it of Renfield being helpless to stop it and innocent people getting it. When there's the mob versus Rebecca and Renfield at the bar, I mean, they're all baddies. So you're like, yeah, get him with a plate.
Yeah. Well, this is also a vampire movie, not just a comedy movie. And so we want to go back to our vampire season and reflect on some of the lore in this movie that we learn about vampires.
There were so many things that they hit on that we talked about in our vampire season. And I want to start with Dracula's physical appearance. And he has a mouthful of pointy teeth, just like the vampires in 30 Days of Night.
Yes, those are the best vampire teeth, I think. There's no hiding that you're a vampire with those teeth. And he also has like the worst thing ever that I think, which is those long, gross nails.
Mm-hmm. He has the black eyes.
Yes, I like that. I liked how his eyes would turn black when he goes feral. Mm-hmm. And Renfield's turn yellow when he, I guess, goes into beast mode,
mm-hmm.
which is cool.
We know that not only does Dracula need to drink blood to survive, but he also needs to drink blood in order to heal himself and come back into his power.
Right. And it looks like he's been trying to heal for a very long time since being burned alive. It seems like he hasn't fully healed in all that time.
Yes. There's an implication that he's immortal. In some of the other vampire movies that we've watched, they actually do age just very slowly. Some of them are kind of frozen in time, but immortal or could be killed. With the way that Rebecca and Renfield go about killing and dismembering him at the end of the movie, it seems like they're a little skeptical over his ability to die or not. So it seems like he might be like a true immortal. I guess we'd have to see if they do a second one.
I appreciated that they addressed that. Like Renfield's like, yeah, I've seen this guy live through a lot of stuff, so we're just gonna go with all of the lore behind vampires and see what we can do. This was a new one for me. I don't know if this popped up in any other vampire movies we watched, but he gets more out of victims who are like pure and innocent as opposed to people who are bad guys, right? Like people who are the abusers in that support group. Like he says, this is trash, right? When Renfield brings him, I think it's the hitman or Mitch, I can't remember who. And that's why he wants that busload of cheerleaders. It's because those actually heal him faster. So I guess that tells us that Renfield's been bringing him jerks for a really long time.
It's the first movie where that's been criteria, and I liked that twist to it. It makes it more obvious in retrospect that he would want to target the 12-step group, but mm-hmm. it was a good twist on how he would want to select his victims.
Yeah.
We have some kind of standard vampire stuff. He can't be out in the daytime. The sun, you know, literally burns him up.
We never see him actually turn anyone into a vampire in this one.
Right.
Which I was expecting. I guess he turns familiars, but he has not turned any vampires. He must be so lonely.
Yeah, I was really hoping that they would lean more into the Dracula's Bride with Bella Francesca. I 100% thought she was going to be a vampire by the end of this movie.
Yeah, she was totally into him.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, get it, girl. Get that world domination.
Right. When they're moving Dracula into the Lobos mob house, they transport him in his special coffin. So means that he has a dedicated sleeping space that he needs. Can't just sleep anywhere.
Another new one in this movie is that his blood actually heals people. Kind of an opposite take of the Dracula turning people into vampires by sucking their blood. Like if you suck Dracula's blood, then you get healed, but you're not necessarily turned into a vampire.
I liked the gag at the end where there is just like a picture of Dracula's blood like on the table.
She's like, is this a GMC?
Dracula in this one, in human form, not human form, in vampire form, he can fly, teleport short distances, it seems, and also turn into bats.
Yeah, I thought the turning into bats thing was pretty neat. I liked watching him turn into bats. I thought that was cool.
I thought the effect was really fun.
We also get one last gag with the welcome mat. And the vampire lore, right? He has to be invited in, and he gets invited into the 12-step program, but he also gets invited into Renfield's apartment with a welcome mat that says, please come in, which I thought was so perfect.
Yeah. Funny little moments like those were great.
I think that might have been my favorite Nicolas Cage scene in this movie, when he's sitting there at Renfield's table and he's just like, oh, yes, you were going to bring me my dinner. Are you sure? Like, he's just like fucking with him. And I'm like, this is the Nicolas Cage I want. Give me more of this.
It was so good.
So now this isn't specifically vampire lore, but it does take place. But this movie does take place in New Orleans, which I thought was a nice touch. There's plenty of mythology surrounding vampires and their connection to New Orleans. Number one being Anne Rice and the Vampire Chronicles that she's written that have all taken place in New Orleans. Of least of not which is Interview with a Vampire.
True Blood also takes place in Louisiana.
Oh, that's right. I don't know if you've heard of this guy, Le Count de Saint-Germain, who was like this legendary dude in the 1700s in Europe, but was supposedly a vampire. He had like an eclectic set of skills that it seemed like you would have to live many lifetimes to achieve, right? He's a good musician. He worked with, I think, precious materials. Always looked young. Was also kind of a player. But anyways, he supposedly died. And later on, this guy, Jacques Saint-Germain, showed up in New Orleans and kind of similarly just had a very diverse background and set of skills, would be out with a different woman every night and no follow-up. And so myths started circulating about him being the Count. He's the vampire come back to New Orleans. Have you ever heard about this guy?
I have not. It's so interesting. Like, such an eclectic local character.
It's probably one of those things that I'd seen in like some old History Channel, learn about vampire documentary or something. But yeah, he turned up and I thought that was so interesting. And it's such a real way to see how legends start, you know, and urban myths. He just had a lot of similarities to this guy and same name, and I guess that makes him a vampire. There's a few businesses in New Orleans that have really leaned into the lore that's attached to the city. If we ever go visit, Kate, I want to go to this NOLA Vampire Cafe. Because how cool is that?
So cool. I love it. I love it when people commit to a bit. And this is a great one.
They sell wine in like blood bags.
Nice.
That's on their site. And I'm kind of like, ooh, I want to order one. But yeah, all of their wine is like that they have featured is named after Dracula or vampires. And their cocktails are similarly named. Their food. It's fun. And we'll have to check it out if we ever go visit.
Definitely.
There's also a New Orleans Vampire Association, Kate.
Oh.
But every year since Hurricane Katrina, the founding members have taken food out on the big three holidays to people who need it. So it's a bunch of vampires doing good for New Orleans.
Good for them. They could have just opted to dress up and go to the Ren Fair, and instead they're using their, you know, their collective power for good.
That's right. There are good vampires.
So what did you think of the Lobos Dracula thing? I have to admit, it was kind of far into the movie before I remembered that Lobos means wolves.
Same. I think it jumped out at me when we go to their headquarters, their bad guy headquarters, and there's a giant wolf statue like in the middle of the room. And I'm like, oh, right, Lobos. And then, oh, this is so funny. Their cocaine bags are stamped with a wolf logo. Like, who would do that? That is so blatantly like, we don't give a fuck if you catch us. We don't give, in fact, so much so, we stamped this illegal drug with our sigil, with our sigil. I liked it when I finally, when it, when it finally clicked, I was like, oh, nice. I love that they tossed this in because there is some lore. It's more recent where there's either a rivalry or a friendship between vampires and werewolves. I think most recently that I can think of is, you know, Underworld. That's the most obvious movie that calls this out.
Mm-hmm. True Blood also has a whole like werewolf thing in it. Yeah, they kind of, it ran for long enough that I think they hit every possible vampire lore angle.
Was this in Twilight too?
Yes. Yeah. Were there definitely
werewolves? Okay, that's what I thought. Yeah. So, I didn't know how far back that went. You know, I assumed that these. I made a lot of assumptions because I was not really a vampire person before last year, but I had just sort of assumed that the two myths had evolved together and that's where this rivalry thing came from. But actually, sorry, like the first mainstream exploration of this type of rivalry was Dracula versus Wolfman, which was in the 20th century. One movie that jumps out at me where they're on the same team is Monster Squad, of course, which we covered. Wolfman's got nards.
Yep.
But there's really not a whole lot of old-timey lore about this type of rivalry or relationship. In Eastern Europe, there was a super early belief that if you didn't kill a werewolf the right way, it would become a vampire. But nothing about the two coexisting so much. In fact, in a lot of lore, werewolves are actually considered good guys. They're protectors. In the Romani lore, they were protectors of caravans. And in Irish lore, this is also a hint of the rivalry. There is a priest who turns himself into a werewolf and protects travelers from vampires. So vampires being the obvious bad guys here.
I don't know enough about werewolf origins to speculate too much on this, but my assumption was because vampires are soulless or have like communed with demons or the devil or sold their soul in order to become immortal for the original ones. And then otherwise you just get turned into a vampire, that makes them more evil. Whereas werewolves almost feel like a natural phenomenon. Like, it's not like there's like a demon that you have to make a deal with in order to become a werewolf.
Yeah, and werewolves are not immortal the same way that vampires are. They're not necessarily soulless. They're not avoiding God, right, at the end of it all. They're just like a monster. So I can see that. I can see why vampires would be the bad guy in this scenario. Werewolves are very Jekyll and Hyde. There's like still a good person in there somewhere. Came across this cool little tweet of a map somebody made of vampire Europe versus werewolf Europe. Like where the primary lore is predominant. And so we'll put that on the blog so you guys can take a look. But there's a good chunk of Europe that is mostly werewolf. Actually, if you think about like Spain, like it's almost like the outer edges of Europe appear to be predominantly werewolf. And then southern Europe is mostly vampire. And then in central Europe, that's where it's sort of equal weight, either one being the predominant lore. It's kind of interesting. I don't know how accurate it is, but it sounded like this person put some time into coming up with a map, and it's all fake anyway, so check it out and enjoy it.
Well, I know that this was critically panned in a lot of ways and didn't do very well, but it is available to rent or buy on streaming at this point, just really a handful of months after it came out in theaters. So I would recommend that you give it a shot. It's a very easy, fun, pretty lighthearted horror comedy, much lighter on the horror, heavier on the comedy. So I think even if you're not a big vampire or horror fan in general, this would still have some fun things for you.
Definitely. It's got some really great horror effects that are fun, a little gross, but obviously fake. So if you get squeamish, keep that in mind. And it's got some really great sets. They do a wonderful job with the sets and the lighting in this movie. It's like a giant fun cartoon. I do recommend going into it with low expectations as far as like anything too deep, and just have a good time and enjoy those Nick Cage moments.
This wraps up our spring series. So we will be coming back in July with Oculus.
See you there. This was Not Quite Dead.
Check out our other episodes wherever you listen to podcasts.
Follow us on Instagram at Not Quite Dead Podcast and on Twitter at NQD_podcast.
Follow our blog for bonus content at notquitedeadpodcast.com.
Thanks for listening.
And happy watching.